Zionism was born in Western Europe in the 80s of the 19th century in conditions when, under the influence of rapidly developing capitalist relations, Jewish communities disintegrated and Judaism lost its influence on the Jewish masses. So it goes on. You see, what we have here, Churchill's papers, the writings of Nestor Webster that I haven't mentioned, World Revolution, this particular document, was an enormous field for study if only people were aware of it and if only they weren't frightened away.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the Holocaust is a jolly sensitive issue, and I'm not in the Irving field at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my friend who I mentioned earlier on, she suffered. And this is without question. Now, any subject should be vulnerable or should accept analysis, investigation.
Right. Unless you're hiding something, Barry. Unless you've got something to hide.
Yeah, well, you've got a point, of course. But you see, nobody is allowed to get near it.
That's
and
right.
Legislation in Europe and in this country has progressively moved towards locking the whole thing up tight and making it a criminal offence almost to even think about it.
Well, it is a criminal offence where I'm sitting.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
You see, I have no taste for anybody who wants to dismantle the whole thing irresponsibly.
Right.
But academics should be allowed to look at this just as they would look at any other subject, because I don't think sympathy would move in any direction from that for the victims. The victims were there because they were sent there to horrendous conditions, and we know huge numbers died. Nobody can argue that.
Well, but, you know, here's the interesting thing about what I've learned about some of my study is that many of the Jews that were sent to these camps for a whole host of terrible endings.
Yes.
They were sent there because they were not the type of Jew that they wanted to immigrate.
Well,
what we call a Moses following, Ten Commandment following Jew.
Yes.
And the ones that they wanted were from a different mindset.
Quite. Yes, one can't argue with the conditions there and what was done to these people.
Terrible things.
There's no question about it, and I don't think any sane person would wish to question it. But you see, it's the one person I've seen who has challenged it in any degree is Professor Norman Finkelstein.
Yes.
I think that's his name, Norman Finkelstein.
Yes,
I looked for his book, I couldn't find it, I got it on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, he, as a Jew, with relatives who were involved in the Holocaust, he really is in an unassailable position to analyze it, question the figures and question the publicity. But when his book was reviewed in the London Review of Books a few years ago now, it was perfectly clear that there was more than one faction, and one of the factions was really attacking Finkelstein, not his evidence.
That's right.
It was just intolerable to them that it should even be mentioned. And, of course, another man closer to Israel, who also was affected by the Holocaust, I'm not so sure, he wasn't in a concentration camp himself, is the late Professor Israel Shahak,
mm-hmm.
inside Israel. I mean, his book, Jewish Fundamentalism in Israel, and his book, Jewish History, Jewish Religion,
yeah.
The Weight of 3,000 Years, they are particularly illuminating, and that is, you know, by a member of the Jewish community himself.
Right.
Reading those, one understands a great deal more of what Israel is about, or has been about, from the critical viewpoint of an academic.
That's right. Well, see, and here we are, you and I, Eric, my webmaster, many others around the world. We're piecing together this, and I'm going to say what it is. It's a criminal conspiracy. But here's the problem. Nothing is ever said about the victims that they're creating, and they're creating many. And here's the thing I'd like to point out. In the last century, by direct or indirect action of this group, over 100 million people were murdered, Barry. 100 yes. million. Now let's take a look at those figures. Let's talk, first we'll go to the crypto Zionists, crypto Jews that were working within the Turkish government
yes.
to slaughter the Armenians.
Yep.
That was the first genocide that was committed at the behest of this group. Then we have, of course, World War I, which was completely a fabricated war on behalf of these people. We've got the Rothschild fortune being employed to create and foment hatred and launching that German war. And when it was finally an armistice was coming, according to Friedman, they torpedoed that armistice and in order to further the damage. And then set themselves up for a second world war where 57 million died.
Yeah.
But in the midst of all that, this same group of 4,000 of these folks got into Russia and in the steppes of Russia at the urgings of Stalin, who was part of their group, murdered another 30 million. When we do the math, we've got 100 million dead at their urgings or their direct involvement. And no one is allowed to connect the dots.
Well, the dots need to be connected, and of course, we both covered so many aspects of which people generally are not aware.
That's right.
And, you know, they are not allowed to be aware of it, and as I say, we are increasingly being legislated to the point where it will be illegal to be aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
not criminals.
It's a key part of history, and I find it particularly worrying. One has to go into this whole thing with a totally open mind. And look at the evidence.
That's right.
And, you know, life is a learning process. There are no set positions on any subject. We learn the whole time. But it's where there's a sort of brick wall, you know, the through which, as it were, we may not pass. If you take the present situation, we're going back to Israel, the state of Israel. Now, in 1934... Neville Lasky, a king's councillor, barrister, who was the chairman of the Board of Deputies of British Jews, and I'm told the last English-born chairman, went to the British government in absolute confidentiality to warn the British government that the certain faction was planning a state in Israel as such, rather than a spiritual cultural home.
Mm-hmm.
And he was regarded when the papers were released, I think about 40 years later, as a traitor.
Yeah.
But he was, you see, there you have this question of a Jew who, one of the clearly the people Churchill wrote of in 1920, as simply being an Englishman who happens to be practiced the Jewish religion.
Right.
But he was first and foremost an Englishman. That was where his loyalties lay. And, of course, in the First World War, as is written up in a book I have, a large number of decorations for bravery were won by Jewish servicemen in the British
yeah.
Army, English
mm-hmm.
Jews in the British Army, including one Victoria Cross. Norman Bentwich, who went to Palestine as a... he was a barrister. I can't remember what his role was, but he was in the part of the mandate of the administration. He had an OBE and a military cross. Again,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're not given away lightly. There is this other side of the coin. And again, it's this moving feast the whole time of being honest about the evidence and taking a balanced view.
Well, I agree with that, Barry. And, you know, we're in a very late hour because it seems like they've really tried to push forward the agenda that they have, and that agenda, while I have a general idea of what it is, it is something that we're developing over a time here on the French Connection and other places.
Yes.
The truth of the matter is that these folks are now in a situation where I think the genie's out of the bottle in many ways, and
yes,
there's a race against time for them to finish their efforts and get themselves locked down before this genie ends up damaging what they put together over centuries.
Well, the tide is moving in many directions, of course, and I think in terms of world power, China is coming up very fast, as it were, on the right wing.
Yep.
Not a political wing, but a figure of speech, as it were. And with a population of, what is it, 1.3 billion.
Yeah.
And a massive commercial, industrial potential, scientific potential. It's like a tidal wave. And I think people who ignore this, rather like standing with their backs to an express train, you know, while they sort of carry on playing golf and playing around, you know, with the current issues. And I'm not sure where this particular power is going to be placed.
Well, let me give you a little insight into that. That may clarify just a little bit. Most of the technology for their most recent military advances have come by way of Israel. Israel has been selling, and not only selling, giving them American technology and British technology for some time. But there's another addendum to this. The first bank that was ever permitted to set up itself in the mainland China,
yes,
from outside of China, was the Rothschild Bank, and that happened a month and a half ago.
Yes. The Rothschilds have, in the last 20 years, I've noticed, reading the financial pages, have tended to go to earth, as it were, go behind cover. There's no doubt about the power. We were discussing this yesterday. And they do, but they have branches everywhere. You see this happening.
Yeah.
A report here, a report there. And there's no doubt the strength of that empire is I would have thought unchanged. And what impact it will have in China, I don't know in the long term. I'm not qualified to say. One can only look at a situation and the potential of the Chinese and the moves into Latin America as well.
Yeah.
Something is going to be shaken.
Yeah.
But as you say, they are currently establishing a foothold there.
Well, they're the only bank that has the right to trade from being a bank from outside of the mainland.
Yes.
And so they're the only conduit permitted between the rest of the world and China,
yes,
in a banking sense. Now, that by itself is going to give them enormous leverage on everybody who does business in China. But even more than that, because China's reliance on export credit is going to be either make or break them as a nation, you know what they did to Germany when they decided that Germany was going to be boycotted under, during the 1920s and 30s. They,
yes,
they collapsed that place. Now,
yes,
if these people from the outside want to collapse China and send it into a nightmare, I'm sure they can do it.
I can't see the Chinese being that naive or that vulnerable. They will have weighed this up. And they're very clever people. And they're quite capable of studying history.
Mm.
It's a very interesting one at the moment. But certainly, the ground is beginning to shift. I don't know whether you... I imagine you come across Professor Kevin McDonald's paper Thinking About Neoconservatism.
I haven't read it, no.
And we're really back to the Middle East. Now, here is an academic who is looking at neoconservatism and linking it directly to Zionism and Israel. And the fact that, you know, the sort of second-string operatives are working behind people like Rumsfeld,
yeah,
who are the sort of front men.
Like Feith in the Pentagon and Scooter Libby and the rest of these neocons, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, you got Crystal and people like that,
yeah,
Wolfowitz,
yeah,
behind the scenes. They're highly influential. And of course, a project for the new American century,
right,
which is being pushed.
Yeah.
But you see, when you get academics like this coming out, and you've already got the other names we've mentioned, then something is happening. People at that level, that academic level, are not fools. And when they start to write like this, they are putting a finger on what they believe in.
Yeah.
It's not gutter journalism, it's analytical. And they name names and situations. I mean, we know Richard Perl is on record in Lilienthal's book as having very close connections with Israel.
Absolutely.
And loyalties to Israel, which circumvent those to the country in which he lives. And he's not the only one, that's quite clear. And you've got the Pollard case, of course, which crops up, you know, quite often in the books when there's a campaign to have him freed. But there was, a betrayal of the home country on behalf of this small nation. forgetting the worldwide catchment of the people, this small nation, which, again, has been protected by the United States. And I'm sure the mass of the people in the United States, even allowing for the evangelical Christian faction, can't be behind this eternal preference for Israel.
Well, they are, because many of these people believe that this is their route to salvation, and it is a very virulent type of Christianity that they practice.
Yes.
And as a result, and they're a large number, there's 26 million of them, so if you were to juxtapose that onto the British population, you're talking half of your public.
Yes.
So they are a powerful force, and they're being led by crypto-Zionists, such as, Falwell and this guy, Pat Robertson. And I got to tell you, if they were ever to find out the truth behind this conspiracy, this is the real shift in the world.
Yes.
If we were able to begin to chip away at their understanding of the world,
yes,
there would be a change that would shake the planet.
Well, I think, as I think we agreed earlier when we spoke, it's becoming a case of over-egging the pudding.
Mm-hmm.
It is the repeated emphasis on the Zionist agenda, as it were, being rammed down people's throats through the media, is beginning to become apparent. I was talking to some young people I've known for some time, and I think certainly young people must be a very potent influence for the future. And they were quite clear about the brainwashing that goes on. It goes on through the education system, through the media. Yeah. Because sooner or later, of course, they say, hang on, you know, there's a hell of a lot of this. You know, another point of view, or they read something which exposes what's going on.
Well, Barry, you're absolutely right about that. And I got to tell you something. Since my childhood, and I'm a child of the 1960s, and I think you've probably got a couple of years on me. I won't ask you how
many.
Quite
a few.
I won't ask you how many. But, I mean, I'm almost a 50-year-old man. My entire life has been consumed by reports about Israel. And I got to tell you, once I saw these facts that we've been discussing, it all made perfect sense to me. I knew it was the absolute truth that I had discovered, because all of the brainwashing they had done immediately got reversed, instantly.
Yes.
It was Benjamin Friedman's account shifted the world under my feet.
Yes.
And all of these reports and all of these stuff that they had been shoving down my throat for the last 40 years of my life, all of a sudden became lies.
Yes.
And it happened in an instant.
Yes, I can well understand it. I mean, during the war, when I was just a mere boy, one heard little of the plight of the Jews, and undoubted plight it was for the ordinary Jews.
Mm-hmm.
It was after the war things began to be publicized, of course, and there were films of the concentration camps, and I can remember as a young man going to the cinema to see these horrendous films. Nobody would question that at all. It was only, as I think people generally know and looking back, in later years, that it became what Finkelstein called an industry.
That's right.
And all of a sudden, and I read somewhere, a very convincing document, I can't quote it offhand, but where they began to realize they were losing momentum. I suppose it was at the time of the two wars, 67 and 73.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, enormous weight was thrown behind this publicity.
Mm.
And, of course, it's been going at a high level ever since. To my mind, it's rather like the anti-smoking campaign, which I regard as a cover for far more serious toxic pollution. The smoking campaign wears increasingly thin the fewer people smoke, but there's a desperate effort to keep the momentum going. And I think the same thing happens in a sense with the Holocaust propaganda. And I think it's a great pity, because of course, it's not doing the mass of the Jewish population really a service.
No, it's not. No, it's not. And in fact, it's dangerous for many, because I got to tell you, if there is blowback resulting from these truths coming out,
yes.
I've said on this show, I will stand in front of anybody trying to assault the innocent Jewish people in this regard.
Yes.
I mean, it's part of my responsibility of telling the truth to then stand up for people who are going to be victimized, and I will do that.
Yes. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a proper moral position. I mean, in my early years, I had a totally open mind. In fact, there was a great deal of admiration, as I think I said, for the way Israel got itself organized. But then, you see, after those two wars particularly, and then you get to Sabra Shatila and West Beirut and the bombardment there, you begin to, add factors to this picture. Now, I know very well the two people who were well into their 70s who were in West Beirut, who organizing aid, medical assistance, food, and that sort of thing under the bombardment. They were there 6 weeks. Major Derek Cooper and his wife Pamela, who was a widow of Lord Gowrie. This was their second marriage. And they worked ceaselessly for the UNESCO and organizations like that, the Hungarian uprising, the Persian earthquake. And they founded an organization called Medical Aid for Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
And they have friends, they have friends in Israel, the Israeli people, Jewish Israeli people.
Yeah.
And Arab friends, quite impartially. And this is the way they campaigned. But when you read the record of Sabra Shatila and what Sharon did and how he escaped with, I think he lost his job as war minister, but that was about it. And we know where he went after that. But you see, you look at Milosevic, Slobodan Milosevic on trial.
Mm.
You look at the rigged trial against Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
Very selectively, that of course, and who's behind that? I mean, the American element of the coalition, the American government, inevitably, because had they tried him properly on war crimes, then they would have dragged in Halabja, the gassing, they would have dragged in Rumsfeld, and who supplied the equipment and the advice and so on and so forth. The whole stage is being rigged, as it were. If you go back to the Middle East again, the Kissinger plan.
Let me ask you this, because we're coming to the close of the French Connection installment today.
Yes.
Do you have an idea of how we can add fuel to our truth, our fire of truth here? Because I got to tell you, we are underfunded, we are underexposed in the world, and we are over attacked.
Yes.
Yeah, but yet, we are often feel like we're a lone voice for the truth out here. And I got to be honest with you, I'm an honest guy doing an honest bit of work on this truth.
Yes.
In fact, I've had to readjust at times because I got things wrong or whatever. But the facts are starting to show that this is exactly as we've described, Eric and I. And as many of my guests have, David Pidcock, yourself, Muhammad, I've had other researchers from America on.
Yes.
We've got it right. Now, how do we get this we've got it right into the minds of other people, Barry? I mean, how do
we do
it?
The number of points here, I think absolute integrity and absolute impartiality, absolute certainty of the facts, the assembling of the facts, the record, the documentation, and as a basis for working. Of course, a great deterrent still is that of people in public places who are afraid to speak out. We have to pass this top-dead center, as it were, of reluctance, and get people to look at the truth and establish the truth.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to go back. We don't want any repercussions for innocent people anywhere.
No.
Most of all, if you like, in Israel, Palestine.
Yeah.
And we need more figures like Tony Benn who are prepared to stand up and say their piece, and there are very, very few at the moment.
Well, Tony, I had to lambaste him on a couple of points. He still says yeah. 19 hijackers were responsible for the attack at the World Trade Center, and I had to come out and say, Tony, you're wrong. I had to say it. I've got the proof.
Nobody's infallible. We're all learning, even Tony Benn. But, I mean, he's a very remarkable man.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, people in that position are condemned as left-wing. And mm-hmm. left-wing and right-wing are, again, trigger terms.
Big lie. Yep.
That are used to deter people from thinking rationally.
That's right.
If you attack the present situation in Iraq, you can be condemned as left-wing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes. It's a very selective designation, this. It's a tactical term, tactical terms. But I think when people like Tony Benn are prepared to speak out as individuals of integrity, you're beginning to get somewhere, and you need more of them, and you need to identify them. But there are so many of these people in the political system, as we know, we talked about that again, at these nodal points in key positions in the media, in politics, in political parties. Michael Gove is now establishing himself in the Conservative Party. He features in the Jewish Chronicle quite often, for obvious reasons. Now, he was very pro the invasion of Iraq. I saw it in a television program. He was an editor with the Times, possibly still is. When you get names like that slotted in to the system, then they exercise enormous influence because other people, of course, are deterred from speaking out. Even, the most obvious of truths, because there's no intention of allowing it to happen.
That's right. And that's where we are. It's exactly where we are. It's where we are in Europe. It's where we are in America. And I think, that the point that's going to really tip this in our favor is when we finally get the American public to understand that 9/11 was an inside job, it was a Reichstag
yes.
fire, and they were using this as a pretext to do this terrible event that they've created here in Iraq and Iran, these simple truths that are going to become evident soon and are becoming evident are going to be it's going to be the thread that you pull on your sweater that just makes the whole thing fall to the floor. And I think that this is starting to happen, and I want to be honest with you, Barry. They may try to stop me from ever seeing the end of this fight, but you know something? This is a small price to pay for my children and my children's children. If no one's willing to be courageous, then what have we got? We've got tyranny. And you know what?
Yes.
I got to tell you something. I'm not the kind of guy that you're going to be able to shove around, and so there's got to be a few others like me and like yourself and like the David Pidcocks of the world,
yeah.
who and the Felicities who stand up and say, I'm going to Iraq. I'm going to see what you've done. I'm going to report it to the world.
Yeah.
These are the kinds of brave people that we need to embrace and support. And I'm going to be
and people like Dr. Mahathir at the national level.
Yes, Dr. Mahathir.
People prepared to dig their heels in.
Well. We've come to the end of this broadcast. I want to thank you. We went all over the map today.
Well, I hope I haven't led you to around down too many random paths of my choosing.
No, because this is what my show is. My show is a rehashing and a relook at many of the same facts over and over again. But I'll tell you something: in each instance, in each installment, something new, a new version, a new approach, sometimes an entirely new idea is
yeah.
born here. And this is what we're really trying to do, because we've got the facts. I've put them on the website. People can read them.
Yeah.
What we've got from you and from many others is a rehashing of those facts so that more and more people can start enveloping that, having themselves enveloped in these truths. It's not an easy task that we have ahead of us. But you know something? The truth is a powerful sword. And I'm telling you right now, it is a sword that I'm throwing around very, very powerfully. And you made a very good statement. Don't ever be disingenuous with these facts. You have to be honest, and you have to tell people, I may not have got it all right. Help me to rejig the things I may have made an error in, and be honest about these facts. That's the whole key.
Oh, yes.
Well, you know, I hope to have you on at a future date. Maybe we can select a subject you can bring forward for us.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you that I'm very proud to know you, sir. The fact is, you know, we know a lot of the same people, I think.
I think we probably do.
Yeah, we do.
It's very kind of you to invite me to the program.
Well, it's going to throw some weight around, and you may get some negative feedback from the bad guys. I'm sure of it.
Well, that's inevitable if one gets involved. But total impartiality, objectivity, the truth,
yes.
And the fact that we're at the end of the day dealing with ordinary people,
mm-hmm.
of any disposition, culture, race, creed, you name it.
That's right.
And these are the people who will suffer. And it's these people we're really speaking for.
That's right. Well, you know, again, Colonel Barry Turner, I want to thank you again, sir, for coming on the French Connection, and I will be in touch with you. We'll talk privately, I'm sure, very soon.
And thank you, Doe.
Thanks again.
Good night.
Bye-bye.